The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Okay, Tov, if you were in a bank in Lod yesterday,
you might have considered
that bull markets have returned. Because, of course, we all consider ourselves to be in a bear market at the moment. Mm-hmm. But yesterday, apparently, in the bank in Lod, things were very different. When a bull literally escaped from its owner in the street of Lod and presented itself at a branch of Bank Leumi inside the bank. And there was quite a funny video which showed people trying to catch the bull as it sort of cavorted through these passageways inside the bank. And then they tried to entice the bull through a doorway, and they'd hidden like a lasso around the doorway so the bull couldn't see it. And as it came through, they tried to capture it. And then eventually the owner presented himself and called the municipal veterinary services. They had to sedate the bull in order to get it out of the bank. And
absolutely,
I think
bizarre.
All
has
was
this,
well in there.
Yeah, has this bull not heard of online banking?
Apparently not, and the bull thought that it might bring back some bull markets to the bank. So
I just saw the video. It was bizarre. I couldn't believe.
It was very bizarre.
How does a bull get into a bank?
I don't know. You'll have to ask an Irishman that question. How do you get a bull into a bank? You know, I don't know what the answer to that is.
And how does it get through security?
It slipped through security.
Well, that's it.
Surreptitiously.
Yeah, exactly. Yesh, neshek, no. I don't know.
You know the lines, Howard. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Makes absolutely no sense. But what a funny story that was.
It was very funny. And on a more serious note, and just to continue our sporty theme, and I didn't start with this, Howard, on purpose, because I don't want you to think that I might
that
be rubbing your nose in it. But Maccabi Haifa yesterday qualified for the Champions League when they drew against Red Star Belgrade at an away match and played in Belgrade. I have to tell you that going to play against Red Star Belgrade in Belgrade is like walking into a cauldron. The most unwelcoming possible place for the away team to have to visit. The fans are just crazy. Just crazy. I was watching some of the match on TV last night. Maccabi Haifa had hosted Red Star Belgrade at the Sammy Offa Stadium in Haifa last week. The final score of the first game, 3-2 to Maccabi Haifa after they were down 2-1 and managed to recover to score two quick goals at the end and won that game 3-2. And that proved to be very, very decisive indeed, because yesterday, after being 2-0 down against Red Star Belgrade playing in that cauldron, Maccabi Haifa managed to recover to 2-2 and therefore qualify for the Champions League. The last goal coming in injury time at the end of the game, an own goal scored by a Red Star Belgrade player for Maccabi Haifa and allowing them to qualify for the Champions League. The first time that an Israeli team has been in the European Champions League since 2015, and only the third time in the history of Maccabi Haifa, who are Israel's champions from last season, the third time in their history that they'll qualify for the Champions League. So exciting news. And that obviously means that we will hopefully have some quite high profile teams coming to play in Israel against Maccabi Haifa when the group stage of the Champions League begins, which is we're all waiting to see which group they get drawn into. And of course, which of the big European teams might be here to visit.
Absolutely incredible. That'll be really amazing. The Israeli government has moved into damage protection mode in an effort to prevent the signing of the Iranian nuclear agreement. Is it a foregone conclusion, do you think?
I think it probably is. And the reason that I think it is really revolves around a statement that was made from the U.S. government that was made by the U.S. National Security Council coordinator John Kirby. And he said on the one hand that that Washington, the U.S. Administration, understands Israel's concerns over the nuclear deal. Then there's the but. Yeah. And the but is that President Joe Biden remains determined, in his words, to rejoin the agreement and use diplomacy as a means to prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear capabilities. And what he says is that the Iran deal would essentially reinstate what he describes as the most strenuous inspection protocols on Iran. So he thinks, and the way that he's presenting this is saying this is some sort of a control that's being placed on the Iranian nuclear program. The agreement will place these controls because Iran was subject to be subject to some of the most strenuous inspection protocols, obviously under the guidance of the nuclear program and the International Atomic Energy Agency, who will obviously be called upon to inspect that. But we already know that Iran is very, very good at somehow avoiding inspections when it suits them, or not disclosing things that are really supposed to be disclosed under the agreement. We've already seen that happen. This is already, you know, we've already been in this movie. So it's very difficult for us to understand how all of that would really help things. Defense Minister Benny Gantz has been dispatched to the United States. He flew out yesterday, I believe, and he is due to meet with senior military individuals, defense establishment representatives in the U.S., and that he will meet with, for example, the CENTCOM chief, the U.S. National Security Advisor, and he is going to try to somehow convince his counterparts within the defense and security establishment that this is really, really bad news for Israel and potentially for the rest of the world. Tali Bennett, who has the special role of Iranian issues within the Israeli government since he left the prime minister's office, he's come out saying that this is really bad news, that it'll bring approximately $250 billion into the Iranian coffers, which he expects will be used in the most part for terror activities, and that he's called upon the Biden administration not to sign the nuclear agreement because it seems, and certainly from the statement that was made, it seems almost now to be a foregone conclusion that this will be done. And, you know, the statement that was made from the U.S. administration is particularly worrying because it almost gives the impression that the Biden administration would have been willing to compromise almost anything in order to just get back into the agreement. Now, we don't really know for sure what their interests are behind the scenes, whether it be oil related, whether it be petrol price related, whether there might be some other issues that we are not familiar with, which are guiding the U.S. administration to really want to do this deal almost at any price. I feel pretty sure that it's not all about imposing the controls of the International Atomic Energy Agency on the Iranian nuclear program. I don't think that that's what's driving them to say that's the main reason why we want to sign this agreement. I'm sure that there are other alternative, potentially even ulterior motives behind the scenes. But the worrying thing is that it seems to me that the Biden administration would have been willing to compromise a great deal just to get back into this agreement. And then we have news coming out of Syria that the U.S. military attacked certain targets within Syria, Iranian targets within Syria. Not clear exactly what that's about, whether this is the U.S. just clearing business out before signing the agreement because they know that they won't really be able to clear that out once the agreement is signed, or whether it's somehow an attempt to placate Israel to say, we're still trying to take care of business in Syria against Iran. It's interesting that Naftali Bennett also went on to say that Israel would not be bound by the Iranian nuclear agreement. And that sort of goes to the thing that I mentioned yesterday, which concerns me, which is the extent to which the U.S. government might impose upon Israel or expect of Israel to abide by certain terms and conditions that are contained within that agreement in order to support Israel's friend America in the broadest sense of the word. And one of the supporting items that Israel would be expected to bring forward to the U.S. is somehow to adhere to certain terms and conditions that are contained within the nuclear agreement. Of course, Israel is not a party to that nuclear agreement and therefore is not obliged to stand by any of the undertakings there. But in the interests of the relationship with the United States, there might be some pressure placed on Israel. So all of this is quite uncomfortable. And we really see the Israeli government going full force to try, A, to convince the US still not to sign the agreement, and of course to try and make the rest of the world aware of what the implications could be. But it seems to me that this is as done a deal as one could hope to see at any point in time.
I'd love your thoughts and your reactions on 34519 or 0618951019. What do you think that Israel should be doing at this point? If you were in the governing seat in Israel, in a position, what would you recommend? Just taking a look at some of the messages in terms of that story earlier with the cow, the bull, rather, in the bank. Stephen says the bull was obviously looking for a cash cow. So I thought that was quite funny. And Jenny says, bulls never quite got over that incident, now known as the China shop incident. Which is very funny.
That thought did go down a few times.
I would imagine. Other serious stories, a Palestinian Authority president met with Turkish President Erdogan in Ankara yesterday. What was on their agenda?
Well, the Turkish president obviously wanted to somehow balance things up after agreeing to return to full diplomatic relations with Israel. And, of course, we heard what the Turkish president said about why they would be returning to full diplomatic relations, because in the quote that I wrote, that I read to you guys last week, it was about helping our Palestinian brothers. That was the quote that certainly caught my eye. But on this occasion, he invited Mahmoud Abbas to visit him in Ankara. They discussed help that Turkey might be able to offer to the Palestinian Authority. Turkey has supported not only the Palestinian Authority, but indeed the Hamas regime in Gaza on numerous occasions. And this is just another classic example of Turkey trying to play both sides of the conflict. We've already seen that Turkey would be, be very, very engaged with NATO, but still visiting Iran and meeting with Russia, trying to play both sides of that particular issue. And now, of course, trying to placate the Palestinians to encourage them to think that the fact that the full diplomatic relations with Israel, now that those have been returned, that this doesn't affect our friendship and our relationship with the Palestinians, with the Palestinian Authority, and I'm guessing in the fullness of time with Hamas in Gaza as well. So it wasn't exactly clear what was being discussed in detail. That information wasn't released, but this was, I think, more about a photo opportunity to allow Mahmoud Abbas to feel loved and wanted by the Turkish president, and of course to send back to the street in Ramallah and to the Palestinian Authority, that Turkey continues to support the Palestinian people, the Palestinian Authority, both morally and, I guess, financially as well, and that Turkey very much stands on the side of pushing the two-state solution. So that really was what things were all about. I don't know where Turkey is going to land up with trying to play all sides of the different conflicts that are going on at the moment. I think it's a relatively dangerous game to play. So Absolutely. Far, they seem to be doing it pretty well, because nobody has really said to them, you've Pick annoyed me to the point where I'm going to cut you off, you know. So they still seem to be linked with both sides. Yeah, and of course, their position on the Bosphorus and the control of the Black Sea is absolutely crucial right now, because we've seen a few grain ships have come out of Ukraine, and of course they have to come through the Bosphorus to leave the Black Sea to get to the rest of the world, and that's controlled by Turkey. So, you know, they do have a very, very powerful position. This idea of Constantinople being the bridge between East and West, Istanbul today, of course, the former Constantinople, still remains a very valid position that the Turkish are enjoying.
A very, very interesting game to be playing, because, wow, they really, one wrong move, and you just wonder how it crumbles. And Erdogan, not exactly known in the past for his gentle manners. I'm actually surprised and quite impressed in some ways as to how he is managing this. Either way, Israeli schools seem to be headed for a strike when the new academic year opens next year. Is there ever a year maybe when they didn't open because of COVID. But is there ever a year where Israeli schools actually open on time? They seem to do this every single year. And then it comes as a surprise and everybody's shocked. Oh my goodness, Israeli schools are going to go on strike. What do you expect different? It's every year, Anthony.
I don't think anybody's shocked. There have actually been years when the schools have opened on time, but there's never really been a year when there wasn't a threat that they wouldn't open on time. At least the threat was there.
Right, so, thank goodness. So, yeah, consistency wins.
Mm. Yeah, I'm a little frustrated with this because, you know, of course, a lot of TV time and news time is being devoted to the discussions between the Treasury and the teachers' union about salaries. That's really what this is, that this whole discussion is about salaries. Now, let's start out by saying we know that teachers are not remunerated sufficiently for the work that they do. Let's start with that.
Right.
Having said all of that, what finance minister Victor Lieberman quite smartly tried to do was to say, we will pay you more, but we want it linked to performance. We want it linked to something. We're not just
not
going to give you money, more money for doing the same. We want to reward excellence. We want to reward improvement. We want people to do better, and then we will pay you. And to that end, he said the following: I will be prepared to increase quite substantially the salaries of new teachers in order to try and attract high quality people into the job. And in addition to that, I will increase salaries for those teachers who show that they have high performance levels. Exactly how that's measured, I'm not going to get into right now, but his attempt was really to try to link performance with increased pay. The teachers' union said no to that. What they want is increased salary for years of service. And they consider years of service to be equivalent to excellence, that those teachers have devoted their many years to this very, very benevolent task of trying to educate Israel's children should be rewarded better after so many years of service. So the prime minister has had to intervene. He, interestingly, has said, we do want to reward teachers who have been around for so long, and we do wish to reward years of service. But the finance minister is standing pretty firm on saying, I want it to be linked to performance rather than to years of service. Israel's schooling system, unfortunately, is very broken. And it's very, very sad to see, because we as a people value education very much. And the reason that it's broken, well, not the, the things that are broken about it, it's very difficult for me to say exactly why it's broken. Mm. But the things that are broken within the system are a lack of respect towards teachers, the way that children and parents treat teachers in the schools is just horrendous. Almost no levels of discipline. And so it's almost a free for all. That's not okay. The fact that we don't have enough teachers and enough high quality teachers who are dedicated to the task of educating people, the fact that the people, the teachers who do teach don't get rewarded and remunerated enough, means that our school system is broken. And the children are being taught to pass the exams. Those exams are not necessarily of the best level and do not necessarily reflect the quality of the content that's being taught, but the children are being trained to pass the exams rather than being educated. And there are two different things here, because unfortunately, frequently, teaching children to pass an exam doesn't educate them. So we've got major problems with our schooling system, and unfortunately, this discussion about what teachers will be paid is like sticking a Band-Aid over a huge crack, and the main issue is really still not being addressed. Sorry I've run over time, but I feel very strongly about that.
It was very important. That said, Anton, in Israel's defense, have you ever met an Israeli adult who doesn't know everything?
Not many, no.
So and there we go.
I will say, Howard, that having said that and having seen the brokenness of our education system, it's incredible how educated our workforce and our population is. Because when you see the schooling system, you could never imagine that people could go into real jobs after this and actually conduct real life.
And yet, that's my point. It was a strange way of making that point. But you see, we really do need to wrap it up. We're running late. But somehow, as broken as it is, something is still working. And that's so interesting to try and figure out. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45 for the Israel Report.